wake up in your face on the bedroom carpet. Count back all the ways that you ended up there. Can't remember someone else's story. You can't remember that you don't feel sorry. So get up, get out. Lines are gone with the...
Hi everyone, welcome to Under My Host. Corey, Matt, Brian, we're all here today. And of course, this is an unusual show for us, and I'm really am not sure what we're going to end up talking about. Well, David Weglar's still 630, the founder and the head distiller. He's joining us, and Dave's been with us before. And then we've got Timothy Keith, who is a winemaker, Leaf and Vine, and he's in Napa in California. And he's also a columnist. He writes our Finding the Flaw column. So he's not been with us before. So we'll end up talking about his winery a little bit and what he does. Erin Jimkoski, food editor. Formerly, she was the editor-in-chief of Craft, and she's the food editor now. And Jeremy Danner's back. Danner, of course, everybody knows who Danner is. Danner's the... you have like the world's longest. He's the ambassador brewer at Boulevard Brewing Company in Kansas City, Kansas.
Missouri.
I never mess that up. It's that
That's
whole long
words.
Yeah, right. Because Weggs is in St. Louis, Missouri. Missouri. Yep.
He's on the good side.
The good side. Anyway, so Erin actually wanted to do a craft show. So I should just sit back and get wasted and let Erin take the reins. I think
that's good.
Yeah, Erin really wanted us to do a show, and I figured like it would
You're throwing the pressure out early in this.
What kind of pressure?
I'm well on my way, so I think it's a little late for us to switch roles.
So Erin, I guess, we'll talk about what we're doing at Craft more specifically. Of course, Brian writes in Craft, hopefully. Matt reads Craft.
I was about to say, do I write it?
You're more than welcome to. I don't know if we'll be able to run it, but you can try to write something for us if you would like. So anyway, before we get into anything, of course, it's going to be just a matter of catching up. And I think maybe we'll hit Tim first, since there's more that we don't know about what Tim's done or what Tim is doing. But I want to go ahead and just get out of the way, since I forgot to check and see what our national day is. It's not Scrapple Day, whatever the national day is. I forgot. I said I was going to check.
Yeah. That sounded delicious. Good.
Yeah. Well, we didn't eat Scrapple. Matter of fact, Brian made us ramen for dinner. So after we finish recording, we're going to be eating ramen upstairs. And he did Kenji's ramen recipe. Yeah. Sorry.
Awesome.
Today
I'm actually going to be eating ramen for dinner as well, and it's like 18 cents a package. So I got that on all of you.
Tim, you've never been on before, so why don't you talk about what you do in wine and?
Hello, everybody. I know there's not a live audience right now, but whatever. So I started a label back in 2010 called Leaf and Vine. And at the same time, I had just left. I was the winemaker for a winery in Napa called Quixote and knew I wanted to work for myself. So I started my own winemaking consulting kind of company called Everybody Happy Wine Company. And Leaf and Vine was the first label that kind of got us going, and it's kind of been our main label since. And for the last 3 years, I have made our wines and the wines of some of my other clients on Treasure Island in San Francisco. And if you haven't been there, if you're in San Francisco, I recommend you check out that location, because it's kind of the land of misfit toys to a degree. And then just this year, we purchased a small warehouse in South Napa where we're doing our wine production. And actually have a bottling run coming up on the 24th of this month. So we just got done with harvest, sort of. I've actually got the grapes still fermenting, so I'm still growing a harvest beard. And so that's kind of my background over the last, 5 years in a... quick synopsis as quickly as possible.
And of course, the people like Tim is writing. Well, what are you, because I don't know if people immediately will know when we talk about Finding the Flaw. Do you want to explain your column a little bit? Because I think you do have the kind of column that I think people that don't really know that much about wine may need a little bit more of an explanation about what you're trying to teach people and what you're talking about.
Well, so, I mean, what the first column was about finding the flaw, and I discussed, you know, different types of wines that might be considered, like, nasty or just repugnant, and then kind of tried to flip the kind of concept of, like, well, like, you know, these are concepts that are, you know, just completely wrong within the wine spectrum, but then there's a different world within wine where if you really kind of dive into it, you can start to find these funkier wines that are actually quite interesting and complex and really enjoyable to drink. And so that was kind of the first column. And I think
We won't talk about your second one yet.
We won't talk about the second one.
We won't talk about the one that's not published. But I do think that...
Really, my idea is with that first column is just kind of take some of these really complex, very chemistry oriented situations, but hopefully put it in a way that is kind of understandable for most people within the wine kind of drinking populace.
Well, and what I think was really interesting, and I think a lot of beer drinkers and brewers and home brewers would really get, was really what Tim wrote about was that there are these flaws in wines, but they can also be attributes. So it's the same as saying Brett beers, like all these wild beers, these sour beers, these things where a lot of people will drink, if somebody doesn't know beer and they were to drink a sour beer or a wild ale, like there's the smell, like what is that smell? What is that taste? Yeah. For some people that are drinking wine, they're introducing stuff that winemakers would pull their hair out if it was in their wine or in their winery. So I do think, I think it's actually a really great column for people that are into beer. I think it could help them maybe understand beer, and maybe they would find wines that they do enjoy that have those similar profiles. I thought that was a really great one. And I think what is really nice, I think sometimes people will drink wine and they'll think that they don't like a wine. I don't know. I'm guessing that's Danner's house.
Yeah, so who's breaking up right now?
I don't know if anybody's breaking. There's just a weird back. There's a weird.
Yeah, no, I got that too.
Yeah, there's just a weird noise in the background. I don't know if it could just be a bad connection. So no, anyway, I think the column is great. And I probably, when the next time I share the column, we probably need to direct it at beer drinkers, because I think that it's a pretty interesting concept, and I was really excited when Aaron and Tim talked about it. And I guess Aaron finally got your stuff. No, he's been very, very busy with so I'll just totally call him out of the show. He's been very busy with Harvest, so it was like pulling teeth to get
never
his column.
Much of a winemaker during Harvest.
So Wegs, why don't we go before we start talking to Danner? Why don't we get caught up with what's been happening with you and Still 630 since you were on the show?
When was I last on the show? What's been going on?
You were on the last show that we did before we stopped recording,
right?
So it's been like a year and a half.
Things have been rocking and rolling for us. We're just trying to put away as much spirits as we can. I'm looking right now at our big experimental short-term aging rack that's got, you know, like 15 different spirits and stuff on it that we're trying to get some experiments off the ground, aging for a year or so, see how the recipes turned out and where we need to tweak them and distill them again, keep going. We just released our breakfast brew, which I think you guys may have a little bottle of, which is our... coffee-infused whiskey. Came out really interesting. Kind of proud of that one.
Oh, you know what I do have still, which we'll end up opening after. I was going to drink. We have been drinking your stuff. I'm going to open that Alpha ISBA. I haven't opened it yet because it's a beer-bottled whiskey.
Nice.
So it's a distilled. Why don't you guys want to open it, and then why don't you tell people what we're going to drink, Wags?
You have the ISBA whiskey version, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that was part of a 4-pack that we released for our first brewery collaboration. And what we did with them was
that beer was really good, by the way.
Oh, good. Yeah, I thought so too. They did a good job. So our idea is to work with all the great local brewers. They're doing all kinds of awesome, innovative things. And, you know, I mean, to make our whiskey, we make beer first and then distill it. So the genius that I am is like, well, why don't we just get other people to make the beer and then distill that, right? So we worked with a local company, Alpha Brewing Company, and they made an Imperial Smoked Black Ale, just a big, bold beer. And part of the deal was that we were going to have a beer and a spirit release. And so for the beer, they brewed up that beer and then aged it in our used Valley Point rye whiskey barrels. Mm-hmm. The brewers came over to my place. We brewed up the same beer. They also brought a bunch of beer and we drank all of it. And then we distilled it and aged it in a new barrel. And so we had about a year old version of the spirit that came from the beer. So we released it in a 4-pack that had those 3 bottles of beer and then 1 bottle of the whiskey. And I think that ISBA whiskey is what you're about to drink.
Okay, cool.
And I loved how like the kind of fudgy, malty notes really came across. And it's totally different than any other spirit I've made so far, which I thought was really fun.
Yeah, I don't think I've tasted anything quite like that either. Yeah, it's really cool.
It has like a really nice.
It's a great idea too. I love the bottle idea, putting it in a beer bottle.
Yeah, it was, you know, kind of fun. It made it for a nice little 4-pack, gift set type thing. And we sold out of those, you know, right away, which was also pretty cool. People were real excited about the idea. Yeah.
So,
and,
Wags,
we got some great.
This is the beer that I had. This is the distilled version of that beer?
Correct.
Okay.
Except for the fact that the beer that you had was aged in used rye whiskey barrels.
Okay.
This beer that we distilled was not. It was aged in a new barrel, virgin oak there. So that was our first collaboration. I've got another one aging here for
That's
our
nice.
630 day, our annual anniversary party next June 30th.
Yeah.
And we worked with another brewery, Modern Brewery here in St. Louis, and they made a beer de garde, which is like a Belgian keeping beer, you know, and it's got some awesome floral notes to it. And that one should come out pretty interesting as well.
It smells really good. It's opening up. When we first opened the bottle, but the nose is really good, and now it's already starting to open up. Yeah, it's good.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I hope
this is kind of torture not to have it in front of me.
I know. I felt really bad, and I will say, you know, we didn't have any of Tim's wine to drink, sadly. I mean, he's a micro producer, and it's not in Georgia like most wine producers are not in Georgia, but especially the small one. So I hear nothing but amazing things about Tim's wine. Before Tim was writing for us, Aaron raves about his wine. So
I don't shut up about it.
One day I'm going to drink Tim's wine.
Day you need to get a Zinfandel and talk about that, because it will change your mind about the category.
We'll just come out to the West Coast and we'll drink everything.
I know.
All of the wine.
That's a good plan.
I know.
Well, then we'll have to question what she's talking about on whether it was an expense paid trip or not.
Tim's going to foot
if
the
you knew
bill.
Our budget, you would realize it's not expensive.
Remember, he's the one eating the ramen packets tonight.
Yeah.
Aaron, you wanted to do a show about craft. What would you like to talk about craft?
Oh, man.
What would you like people to know about craft that you don't think they know? Well, you know what we should talk about real quick while you think about your answer? I don't really get a chance to thank him much. And honestly, there are two guys who have absolutely no interest in doing stuff like this or being very much out in the public. But Jonathan Stahl is our associate editor, and he makes sure that everybody sounds much smarter than they are. And much more well written than they are. You're like, well, you know, you could go ahead and take that personal, Waglar, but you don't write for the magazine.
Kevin is our minion extraordinaire. He is awesome, and we love him to pieces. He's our copy editor. He's, our editorial. What are we calling him these days?
Savant. No, he's really wonderful. He's very, I threw it out there and I knew he would not go for it. I did say to him, if you ever want to come on the show, he's like, no. So you probably will never hear from him. It's just not his thing, but he does a lot for craft, and he really, the final product is, you know, it's, we're a very, very small group doing a lot of work, and he does a great job. So thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank
I know
you,
you're going to listen to this show. We love you. And then the other unsung hero of craft is Otto Lang, who works so much on other things. So between like painting for gallery shows and, you know, doing, you know, work that he's, you know, commissioned to do. He's a busy guy, and he manages sometimes a little bit later than he's supposed to churn stuff out. But this is a guy, I mean, I love him. He's one of my closest friends. I mean, we're very, very close. And he figured out how to do this. He had never done anything with laying out. He just happened to have this software. Mika, who had been working on craft, it was just taking up too much of his time away from his work. And Otto said, "I'll figure it out." And of course we trusted him, or I trusted him, I don't know, stupidly or not, because now he was like, "Woo, I pulled that off." Cause I didn't know that he was like actually really afraid, but he was like, "I'm just gonna figure out how to do it." And yeah, he did, and he does a great job.
Yes, he does.
And yeah, he does. And every issue that he does is better and better because it's a lot of work. I don't think anybody, when we talk about what we do, Aaron, I think it's like a lot of eye rolling. It is so much work. People have no idea. but I love doing it. And then I have to thank Aaron, who Aaron
is amazing.
Aaron is amazing. What else was I supposed to say? And she really has become one of my closest friends. I talk to her more than I talk to anybody else. I confide in her about things that, you know, and it's weird because we've not been able to have a ton of physical time together. I mean, a lot of our stuff is Skyping. Shut up, you perverts. It's Skyping. I know this is a weird show with no direction. I do like we do have, but I.
Get on point, Corey. Get on point.
I'm trying to figure out. That's why I try to make Aaron, put Aaron on the spot. What is the point of the show? Oh, okay, go, Aaron. Take the reins. I'm so exhausted.
Speak up, Aaron, please.
You know, I think that you know, there's a lot of sort of misunderstanding about what we're about, and you know, what goes into, you know, everything that we put in this magazine. You know, a lot of magazines will just sort of you know, take a lot of things at face value and, you know, put it in because they don't have quite the strict criteria that we do. And yeah, we've really set down, you know, some pretty strict guidelines for, you know, the way that we, you know, promote people, because, you know, what we're doing, you know, every day is striving to, you know, basically educate the public about, you know, small craft producers. And, you know, we're doing this through storytelling and, you know, product features and that sort of thing. And, you know, so there's so much research that goes into it. I swear, you know, that our eyes bleed on a daily basis, you know, attempting to, you know, get this research done and, you know, talking to people. And this actually goes back a little bit to our conversation about, you know, like marketing and, you know, sort of writers getting, sort of charmed by big companies who have a lot of money to throw around at them. And, yeah, you know, we've really spent a lot of time essentially learning how to, you know, sniff our way through the bullshit, because there's a lot out there. And, you know, a lot of people, especially now with sort of, you know, big companies catching on that, you know, the little guys, you know, have a better way of doing things. You know, people are, you know, sort of sneaking in with more bull. You have to be careful. So anyway, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm the one who, I mean, Aaron is definitely getting better. I immediately know when something is bullshit. It's just, that is like always been my thing. And Aaron's had like a couple now. I mean, I think like you're starting to see those things that people
I've been
say and
seeing
do
for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's,
but yeah,
it's there are just, you know, little words here, little things that aren't fully explained, and a lot of glossy marketing speak. And, you know, it's one of those things that I want readers to know that we're so careful of. You know, we're not, you know, just taking, you know, whoever comes our way, and even craft companies, you know, we want to make sure that they're also putting out a great product. You know, it's not just about them being small. It's about, you know, making something with quality. So,
Yeah, it is. It's really hard because we, and again, the only people who put the restrictions that craft has on craft is us. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, and it is really difficult because we all have several writers who be like, you know, I want to talk about this and I want to talk about that. And it's like, oh, I mean, that's really great. I'm not surprised. I don't want to say I'm not surprised. I'm happy that Danner wanted to be a part of what we're doing. I didn't think that he would. I don't know if, and it's not, you know, and maybe Danner, I know, and maybe, I mean, I would love to hear what you think about craft. Do you even read craft, Danner?
And if I didn't, I would lie. I would say, yes, I would if I didn't, but I do read it.
I mean, what do you think from coming from, you know...
I think what we're trying to do and what the magazine is doing in general is, you know, I come from the beer industry, and I think it's particularly important right now. You know, we're trying to define what does craft mean, and then within beer, once we establish that, does it ultimately mean anything? Does it tell you anything about the producer or about the quality of the beer or how they report profit? I mean, there's so many things that go into it that we're at this weird spot where we feel like we know when something is not craft when we see it, but we struggle to define what craft is, and it's a strange. There's a lot of stuff happening right now, and it's hard to pick out what is or isn't. And so I think it's important to talk about that and write about it and read about it.
That's why it's important to Corey and Aaron are the self-proclaimed arbiters of what is craft. So that takes
takes
the effort off the rest of us.
We define it for ourselves, not for other people. I mean, I don't tell other people what they should. I'm very, very careful about the kind of statements. No, I know, you smart ass. But, you know, I don't hold our standards on anybody else. As a consumer, I do exactly, and my opinion is exactly the way I behave as a consumer. You will not see me, you know, like Brian knows me. It's like where I shop, the things that I do, the places that I support. It's not that hard for me to do this because it's just what I would do anyway. So I'm not really saying or doing anything that's that much work because it's the research I would do when I'm buying my own stuff, you know, the companies that I want to support. Aaron, is there anybody that we're working with that we haven't really? Of course, Brian, by the way, I kind of like talked about Brian the last time that he's writing really amazing stuff for us. And I do appreciate.
I actually had a question for both Ryan and Tim. You know, as you know, people who you know have written or are about to write for craft. Although I guess Brian, you've technically written for craft now. I know why I want to do it, or I know why I'm doing it. I know why Corey's doing it. But why, you know, you guys, you're you know producer writers for us. Why do you want to be involved? What appeals to you about craft as a platform?
I think for me, it's kind of the kindred spirit of like the mindset of, you know, why you do the things, the other passion projects that you do, whether it be brewing or distilling. It's you kind of see something of yourself in the other people that you're working with. And there is a little bit of a champion for the little guy. I mean, it's like the person, you know, scrapping away to get their brand recognized or to get their product out to market. And there's something like it's kind of a really cool story of just getting those people some recognition or working with them and kind of, I don't know, even picking their brains on various different things. I mean, that last article that I wrote had a ton of different people that I can't wait to talk to again, just because I learned so much from them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a collaborative spirit behind the whole thing. And I dig it. That's why I was so excited to have the opportunity.
Well, and I will say, and of course I want Tim to answer, but you know, Brian is one of those people where we're really fortunate because he has done food. He is a brewer, but he definitely has an appreciation for all things. So when I went to him and I was like, Brian, you want to write about tannins? It's not a subject that a lot of people would have tackled. And I mean, like he like really gets into it. And I don't know if you guys read it, you know, that was the first article that he wrote for us. And of course, tannins are incredibly, you know, important. He did it. Yeah. It was a great article.
Great article.
And
I love
this.
It.
Yeah. He did a great job. The last piece that you wrote for us, I'm trying to, what did you write last? No, what did you write? No, this was your second one. Was this your second one? Oh, I'm sorry. So that was okay. Yes, I don't know why it felt like maybe because we're already working together now,
right?
No, but I honestly, and then of course, because now we're already talking about the third issue that he's going to be doing with us, which will be something completely different. But I can go to him about any subject and he's not afraid to talk about it. Danner is going to be like, definitely. And I guess Danner already kind of answered this question as to why he did it. Cause I was very curious, cause Danner's not somebody who's just like, I feel bad. Cause I thought like, I'll go to him. If Danner doesn't want to do it, he's going to say no. Mm-hmm. And it made me feel really good. Cause he was super jazzed about it. And I didn't think you would say no for sure, but I really didn't expect that response. And it made me feel really good. Cause I do think Danner's one of those people that's really critical about, as he should be, about certain things. And I thought like, if he wants to be involved, it always like these small things where Aaron and I will get, what the fuck is going on?
I just realized that I totally cut you out of that question. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Danner. I had kind of asked him. I had asked him something basically along, you know, pretty much along those lines before. But Tim, do you want to go? Do you want to answer that question?
No, I don't. Not sure.
That's an acceptable answer.
No, I would definitely echo those sentiments. I mean, it's. Honestly, I have a small amount of vitriol towards like faux, like boutique labels. Like I just, it angers me when I see a label put out there by a producer that I know does hundreds of thousands of cases and they're trying to pawn this label off as like something that's, you know, not bulk wine or not something that's, you know, been made by, you know, a warehouse that's the size of, you know, Connecticut, you know, and that stuff happens all the time.
I almost would like you to just, cause we don't talk about wine a lot. I think people understand more the difference between what you can expect when you buy small produced spirits and beer, as opposed to when you say that wine is large produced, what are the differences because you do make small production wine? Like what do you taste that you feel like, how does everybody not know that this is just like a homogenized version of what I make?
Well, and I think that's to kind of touch on that kind of concept, like a small producer or a, I hate to use the word boutique because it's just constantly used, or even, you know, craft producer, like a producer like myself, I'm not looking to make the same wine every single year. I'm looking to make the best wine every single year. And
yeah.
I do a lot of single vineyard wines, and so there's no blends. Like, you know, you can make the same Napa Cab every single year at, you know, Winery X that does 30,000 cases, because they're going to source from so many different vineyards. They're going to have so much tonnage that eventually it tastes like this very, you know, like you said, homogenized thing. Whereas if I work with smaller vineyards and I do like small amounts, I can actually craft the best wine every year, but it's going to be drastically different year in and year out because those conditions are different year in and year out. And that's what makes, you know, a beverage sometimes so cool, especially wine, because it can be so influenced by that season and by that vineyard and by, you know, different winemaking techniques that I might use for that 1 year. And it's that one chance that we get per year. And so you better get it right.
Well, and that's what it feels like, you know, with small production, is to embrace the differences in the year. The fact that we do have so many environmental things that are going on right now that are affecting how much water is available. So
yeah, I think Tim hit on it pretty well too, with the kind of the difference maybe between, you know, craft and the macro guys, is that, you know, he's working with the changes that happen, whether it be from environmental, you know, weather, you know, his harvest, things like that. He's willing to work with that to produce the best product he can, whereas the big guys are trying to through that.
They're looking for a consistency.
I can't imagine either, though. It seems like they're almost too afraid of it. I can't imagine somebody drinking Bud Light and going back to Budweiser and going, you know, this tastes different this year. Like, the grain bill changed.
That's one of the reasons that I love Tim's wine. You know, I know it probably better than any other wine I drink. And, you know, I've been drinking it now for, I don't know, 5 years. And, you know, it's something, you know, something, you know, new and different every year. You know, I actually last week brought a bottle of his gin to a dinner with me, and It was, you know, incredible to think of, you know, what it tasted like 5 years ago. It aged really beautiful, by the way. you know, I remembered at the time, you know, when I first tasted it, it was, you know, I had actually quite a prejudice against Zinfandel because I've had so many terrible ones. And I tasted this and it, you know, completely changed my mind about the category. And, you know, so tasting, you know, these throughout the years, it's been, you know, just a cool experience because, you know, it isn't just, you know, some sort of blank, you know, I could be drinking anything kind of thing that I'd pick up at the grocery store. It's, you know, something that this person has, you know, put everything he is into. And, you know, I appreciate that aspect of it. And I also, you know, appreciate that the part that, you know, that money is going to help pay, you know, for, you know, rent and lives and, you know, that sort of thing instead of, you know, going into the you know, investors, you know, bank. So
that is, an interesting point too, because like we become close with so many of the people that we work with. It's, you know, Danner's the person who put us in touch with Laura Tui, who is also one of our columnists now.
Love
She's
Laura.
They're in the same city. Yeah. She does our canning column. You know, Danner for a long time was like, you really need to look at their products. They're great people. I mean, you know, like, you know their story. This is like a second job for her. She's, you know, does social work. And I mean, when we're working with people, like, we know, like, hey, we got to call them after this time because, like, they're juggling two different things. It's so different and it's so much more personal for us that it is, right. Like, you know, like, Tim's got, like, to juggle these different things. And I don't know. It's, I don't know.
Well, I think that's what makes some of the columns, like, that I've read so just perfect because they have a soul to them as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell they're written by people that actually, you know, care about what they're doing. Whereas, I mean, I don't want to keep turning it back to this big versus small thing, but like, you know, when you work for a corporate entity, like, you know, how much do you really care about, you know, like what you're doing? You're kind of just doing a job at times.
And I don't know, Danner, tell us, what is it like? <Just kidding. laughs> He knows I'm kidding.
You care about doing a good job, but you're not necessarily like.
Oh my god, I'm totally kidding. He's answering.
I'd like to interject that Saison Brett is a phenomenal beer.
I guess like we should drink that before we hang up. We're cutting out. So you're
keep it out of my winery.
Right. That's what, and I think actually people, it's probably like beer geeks. There's like these tidbits of information that they pick up that I think they actually do know that say, you know, Brett is something that winemakers are like, ah,
yeah.
You see it? I'm like, there's nothing
this
in there.
Is
there's some kimchi.
2013 Brett.
I have a question for Tim, if you don't mind.
No.
Yeah. Tim, what happens if you have a really bad year? The rainfall's negligent, the soil's unfortunate, you know, being a small producer and living harvest to harvest as you are, what, you know, if that happens in 2016, what do you do?
Well, I mean, like, so for the most part, we've been fairly lucky. I mean, Northern California in general has pretty ideal conditions. Over the years that I've been making wines, which started back in 2004, We've done quite well. I mean, there's been tough years. And as now that I'm a small producer, since that happened, like 2011, for instance, we had a tough year. Like there were rains that happened in September. There was a dry spell and everybody thought they could get their fruit a little riper. And then eventually rains came back and, you know, mold started to happen. And
yeah.
You kind of hit this point where you're like, well, let's get it off the vine and see what we can do. And that's where, you know, your winemaking abilities really hopefully come through.
Yeah.
And sometimes, yeah, you know what? I bulked wine out in 2011. It didn't meet my standards, and I decided to not put a leaf and vine label on that wine. And it's those are the years that it's really tough to be a small producer because
sure.
You know, the amounts of money you're going to get for selling it on the bulk market are nowhere near what you would get if you sell it, you know, retail or wholesale.
So, I mean, that's the difference. I mean, Tim is the closest thing to a farmer, apart from our farmers that we do, the winemakers. Like, they have the grape. And if the grape, you know, brewers have other different, have other grains they can work with. If mm-hmm. there's a shortage of certain hops, it's difficult if you've got a release that you normally do, but you can't get them. You have so many different options. Even distillers, it's like, it's tough.
Oh yeah.
Because you'd have to change what you do, but you have other ingredients you can work with. Exactly. As a winemaker, when your grapes are, when there's a problem, and I don't know if Tim, how you'll be affected this year. Like I know it was going on with harvest. In the middle of harvest, all the fires were happening. Tim is like out, like helping like horses that don't have a home. harvest, like people don't realize how brutal harvest is for, it is almost 24 hours a day. But I think it would be really interesting for people to hear if you can kind of go through like, what is the process of harvest? Because I don't think most people understand. And I mean, even the time frame of like how many hours a day you're working and why you have to be at the winery.
Yeah.
You know, why it's required.
Well, and I can be quick. And then there's a little extra I wanted to kind of add on to that. Like, I mean, so I source fruit from all over Northern California. Mm-hmm. And we're talking small amounts. Like, some as little as one ton of grapes, which would produce roughly 50 cases of wine, up to, you know, 6 tons of fruit. And so if you guys can do the math, I'll let you do that.
We're so blotto at this point.
Yeah. We've got some mathematicians. So I'm able to mitigate some of, like, year to year, there's going to be some difficulties. But, I mean, for the most part, harvest, it's pushing forward with the droughts. I like to tell people about an old vine Zinfandel vineyard that I sourced fruit from up in Amador County. For the first 3 years that we sourced fruit from there, which is 2010, 11, and 12, I picked on the 22nd of September every single year. Now, this is a vineyard that was planted in 1906, super old vines. And when they're old vines like that, they really are, you know, the kilograms, basically. Well, with 4 years of drought, we've actually seen those harvest dates go down consistently. It was September the 10th on 2013. It was the 2nd of September last year, and it was the 25th of August this year. I mean, these are all things that we have to balance. And for me, like, the harvest season starts, you know, usually about 2 weeks before harvest really even happens. And I don't stop working at least 12 to 14 hour days until those last grapes go down to barrel, and then we go right into bottling. And as a small producer, I'm the only guy here. So there's no one. So I've got to drive out to the vineyards at 5 a.m. I've got to be back at the winery at least till 10 p.m. And the fermentation itself needs to actually be maintained over the course of a day, even when you're sleeping. So there's 3 a.m. wake-up calls every once in a while to monitor active fermentations. So that's why it tends to be a big producer, because they have all these fancy tanks that can do all that stuff in the middle of the night.
Somebody else waking up in the middle of the night.
And I can pay someone to do that, which would be awesome. One of these days.
Danner, do you want to explain the column that you wrote for us that's in the current issue?
The one about...
The article.
Oh, yeah. The one about using gastromatograph to look it up.
It was really about... People, I mean, I had him, you know, he went the scientific route, but I really wanted him to talk about people just assume when they hear hops or in beer that it's going to be like a bitter, resinous.
And they I want to hear about the gastromatograph.
Right. Well, he will. He speaks to beer geeks. Beer geeks, whether he incites any kind of like violence or anger is one thing, but Danner really speaks their language. And when I had approached him, I really wanted him to talk about the misconception that when people hear hops, it's immediately because, you know, our issue was tart, funky, bitter, and delicious. And when people hear hops, they don't realize all the different characteristics, that there are fruity flavors and there are perfumes. There's so many different other things other than something just being really resinous and really bitter. And so he went, you know, he ended up, you know, going his, you know, doing his own bit of his own spin on it. But Danner, what do you want to tell people and that we can tell people to go read the issue?
Yeah, I just
get your ass over there and read the issue.
Yeah, please read this. I just want to talk about what you're saying. A lot of times people say, I don't like hoppy beer. And when I hear that, that to me says, I don't really understand how hops can be used other than for bitterness. So I wanted to.
Yeah.
I wanted to demonstrate the way we're using technology as well as sensory
to create very intentional, distinct profiles for our hoppy beers that are appealing to different audiences. We have, you know, a beer that is very piney and bitter and resinous. But at the same time, we have an IPA that's 75 IBUs that's super fruity and tropical and very easy to drink. So I wanted people to know that there's more than just that green, grassy bitterness and that kind of, you know, like the chlorophyll thing. There's a lot of fruit and a lot of spice and herbal and floral flavor that you can get too.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions with beer, and yeah. And I wanted, it was funny because I really had a hard time. Danner, you know, I don't know why I didn't think of him immediately. There was a lot of times where I've seen him actually tackle certain issues where I'm like, why didn't I think of Danner for that? I mean, even before this, and that's when I was like, I just need to ask him if he wants to do a column. Danner definitely has an he has an interesting audience, and I'm a little afraid of them, but I'm very curious. I'm very curious when we get the first issue out. Maybe we should wait, and if the info at Craft Barn to My Host box just starts to get too full, you're getting your own email, dude.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I request a podcast of Danner replying to those emails.
Oh, totally. Anyway, listen, guys, we ran so far over, and Weglars, thank you for sitting in with us. It was kind of like, I really wanted to get Wegs back on here because he was a staple for, you know, on the show before we took our break, and wanted to get you on. And of course, Tim, thank you so much. I know writing a column this time of year is incredibly difficult. So thank you for finally getting your goal.
What are you talking about? I had it written like 4 weeks ago. Aaron just didn't submit it.
Aaron? I'm going to let you deal with her.
I think we know that.
I'll see you Wednesday.
Danner, I'm so incredibly happy that you are part of the magazine and that you take the time out of your very busy schedule to share your opinion and really to promote craft. I mean, you know, again, he really does has an audience of his own. So I look forward to. I know what he's written for his first column. I don't think it's too, it's not too inflammatory. No, I think people will really enjoy it. No, it's not.
Right amount.
Right
amount of inflammatory.
Brian, thank you. Yeah, I know you're incredibly busy right now. Yeah. I look forward. Matter of fact, on the 30th, we go live. So we record a show next week. We are going to take a break. I did mention on our first show that we're playing this loose. The guys, as I'm saying, Matt knows there'll be no pressure on him. He will turn the show over whenever he sees fit. We all have very busy schedules, and it was kind of the terms to which, like, coming back to doing this, it was like, you're going to hear a show when we can get a show out. We're going to record shows when we have the opportunity. We're going to try to do every Monday. Not every Monday is possible. So this show, whenever it comes out, it'll come out, and then we will record next week. I'm very excited. Next week, we've got Peter Curry of Duncan Taylor. Peter Curry is a Duncan Taylor is a fantastic bottler of Scotch whiskey, and they're very well respected, and he's written for us before. I'm very excited about the article that he's written now. We'll have Dave Pickerell joining us. Dave, you know, I adore Dave. Wow. You know, Dave has, we'll have stuff to talk about, and we will have Matt Pond, and we'll talk about more about Matt when he's on the show. But you guys, I love you all. I mean, of course, like, I love you guys that are sitting right here. You're
group part hug. Of my,
yes. Group hug. And Aaron, you know how much I love you. Tim, you're one of the peas. Weglars, you're my special something.
Yeah.
And I said something. And Danner, I adore you. I think the world of you, and I'm so happy that you're part of craft. I'm so happy that I get my little special texts and stuff from him. He's very funny. He has a lot to talk about. And then I think in the future, we'll get some interesting stuff out of Danner. It'll be Danner at craftbyundermyhost.com. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great night.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, guys.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Go back, repeat, trace the veins that you don't want to see with your hands and your head.